Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, this is Jason, and welcome to Candidate Confessional. If you were listening to the show a few weeks ago, you heard me and Sam talk to Jennifer Palmieri, communications director for the Hillary Clinton campaign, and she told us all about the internal drama that unfolded within the Clinton camp as it became gradually clear that they'd been targeted by Russian hackers. By now, we're also accustomed to the Trump-Russia saga and the steady drip of revelations about that country's intervention in the 2016 election, that it's hard to remember that just a year ago, Russian cyber attacks were not on many people's radar, even if those people were politicians. Of course, the most famous effects of that hack were on the national level, the release of emails from John Podesta, Clinton's campaign chairman, or from then-DNC chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz disparaging Bernie Sanders. But national candidates were not the only targets of that hack, and the untold story of the whole hacking episode was how it trickled down to the local level, scrambling congressional races all across the country.
Hello?
Hey. Okay, I called the other number. Sorry about that.
Meet Annette Tadeo. Until recently, she was the chair of the Miami-Dade Democratic Party, and back in 2014, she was Charlie Crist's running mate during his race for governor of Florida.
Everything about that race, I really loved, except losing by
except the loss.
1%.
So in 2016, Tadeo decided to take another swing at Florida elected office. The Democratic Party threw its weight behind her in the race for the 26th congressional district, located south of Miami, then held by a Cuban-American Republican named Carlos Curbelo.
I'm Carlos Curbelo. I've been talking to our neighbors here in District 26 for the last few weeks, and people are frustrated with government.
To defeat Curbelo, Annette would have the support of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the DCCC, the organization within the Democratic Party that coordinates its national strategy for congressional elections and decides which races to invest in, where to put their time and energy and money and such. And in 2016, they had something they had called the Red to Blue List. This was their hit list of districts they thought they had the best chance of flipping from Republican to Democratic control. The list included New Hampshire's 1st District, Minnesota's 2nd, Utah's 4th, and most importantly for today's show, Florida's 26th. So Annette would run and the DCCC would pour money into her race and she would triumph over Curbelo. And a wave of popular support and grassroots opposition to Donald Trump would carry Hillary Clinton into the presidency and the Democrats back into control of Congress. At least that was the plan. As it turned out, though, Annette would have an opponent more dangerous than either Garcia or Curbelo, against which she would be powerless to defend herself.
Well, what were your top three concerns heading into that race, and where was hacking on that list?
Welcome to Candidate Confessional. My co-host Sam Stein and I sat down with Annette Tadeo to talk about her 2016 campaign. The guy that challenged her in the primary, of course, was this ex-congressman named Joe Garcia. Garcia was actually the person who had lost to Carlos Curbelo, the current representative, in the previous cycle.
Former Congressman Joe Garcia is back in the spotlight facing Annette Tadeo for the Democratic nomination in District 26. How do you feel about Annette Tadeo? You have to get through the first hurdle first.
Look, we feel good. We've got a record.
What was your early perception of the race when he entered? What did you think was your chance of winning the nomination? And
What did you think were your strengths and weaknesses?
My biggest challenge was his name recognition. He was a former congressman. So obviously I was in essence running against an incumbent in the primary. And that is very, very difficult to do. And so I started 24 points behind Joe Garcia. The strength was cleanliness, the not having any kind of blemish on my record. This district in particular was very tired of the scandals. I mean, this district went through David Rivera, who was investigated by the FBI. They put up a phantom candidate. Then later to find out that Joe Garcia, who had been the congressman who had beat David Rivera, had done the exact same thing 2 years prior, and his chief of staff went to jail. So I think this district was ready and was not willing to have somebody with that would play with voters.
So obviously Joe Garcia did not have the cleanest of political records. As Annette just mentioned, he had been linked to a plot to promote phony or phantom candidates as a way of siphoning money and votes away from his opponents. His former chief of staff even went to jail for orchestrating a fraudulent online ballot scheme. This was at least part of the reason why he got voted out in 2014 and replaced by Carlos Curbelo. So there was this basic dynamic. Annette Tadeo, former lieutenant governor candidate, versus Joe Garcia, scandal-plagued former congressman. On paper, if she could overcome the initial gap in name recognition, things looked reasonably hopeful for Tadeo. But there's another element of South Florida politics that we really have to mention here. The 26th District covers the extreme southern tip of the state, including the Florida Keys, as well as some of the southwestern suburbs of Miami. It's an area with an overwhelmingly Hispanic population, about two-thirds of the total, and by far the largest single ethnic group, Cubans. Cuban-American politicians in South Florida are always eager to play up their Cuba cred by emphasizing their family's story of exile. That was certainly true in the 2016 race, both for Curbelo...
My parents, they came as exiles. They taught me sacrifice and hard work.
And Garcia.
My grandmother's courage to stand up to Castro and protect her family taught me to do what's right no matter what.
The consequence of this dynamic is that historically it's been hard for non-Cuban Hispanics to get elected in the region. That was a problem for Tadeo, who was born in Colombia.
We have not been able to break the barrier of electing a non-Cuban Hispanic. And what that means for the future of not just Miami elected politics, but also for the future of Florida as a whole, especially for the progressive side of seeing things.
But to really see how this element of South Florida politics played out in this race, you've got to dive into the Spanish language media. And to do that, I'm joined by producer Zach.
Hi, Jason.
Hey, I believe your Spanish is way better than mine.
Quite possibly. So I was going through all these clips from South Florida Spanish TV about this election while working on this episode, and the first thing that struck me was just the way Tadeo was described in news stories. Like, for example, here's how one channel introduced a story about the two Democratic candidates.
Vamos a continuar ahora con la campaña por el Distrito 26.
This is a show from America TV, a local news station, and the anchor is saying, let's go now to the election for the 26th district, where ex-Congressman Joe Garcia is running.
Joe Garcia.
And then his co-anchor says, against the Colombian, Annette Tadeo.
Contra la colombiana, Annette Tadeo.
She just drops that in. Joe Garcia versus the Colombian. And this kind of thing shows up all over the place. Tadeo went on a Miami talk show called Arrebatados, where she was being interviewed by Maria Laria, a local TV host. And the Obama-Cuba policy comes up. And Laria is asking Annette about her support for Obama's diplomatic opening to Cuba, which obviously a lot of Cuban expats were suspicious of.
La política de Obama quizás en Cuba no ha sido más...
And so Tadeo defends herself, but she's struggling to establish her credibility and explain that she gets the whole Cuba thing. And she says things like, you know, I don't think you have to be Cuban to want this to happen or to understand the pain of the Cuban people. And then she drops in the fact that she left Colombia to escape the FARC, that her father was kidnapped by the FARC when she was younger. As if to say, hey, you know, you Cubans aren't the only ones with communist problems. This element of her biography is something she brings up a lot in these interviews. Like here she is with Univision anchor Ambrosio Hernandez.
Yo soy una persona que ha vivido lo que es la influencia de Cuba en Colombia con las FARC.
Or take, for example, back in that first interview, there's this bit where Laria asks Tadeo about the Cuban Adjustment Act. This is, of course, the law that grants Cubans a fast track to permanent residency in the U.S. And Laria mentions an article in The Economist in which Tadeo is quoted vaguely suggesting that the Adjustment Act might need to go away in the long term.
Tú dices aquí en The Economist que el ajuste cubano fue un error.
And so Tadeo is defending herself and trying to clarify what she meant.
No, al revés, mi contrincante.
So if you add all this up, you can just sort of see that there is this extra hurdle that she has to jump here to prove to Cuban voters that she gets it, so to speak.
Thank you, Zach.
No problem.
Anyway, this was the political environment that Tadeo was confronting. Beating Garcia in the primary was going to be tough, but there were some encouraging signs.
So you mentioned you started down in the polls with respect to former Representative Garcia. But over the course of the early summer, you started closing the gap a lot, and you had a nice fundraising month. Mm-hmm. But in the back of your mind, did you know that the DCCC had been hacked? That hack took place in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that there was this thing that had just happened that was going to affect everything in your race?
No, I did not. And I, you know, I'm somebody that, you know, doesn't – I'm not somebody that says we lost because we were hacked by the Russians. I really don't know that. That's that's a question that I'll never know.
I just want to know when you heard about the hack.
Oh, when the – I didn't hear about it till the publishing of the documents by – I guess Guccifer was giving it to some Florida blogger who honestly don't know, but is some kind of a Republican blog in
Florida.
So
just to set this up, because the DCCC was hacked in, I think, April or May, sometime around then. They never told you?
No, we were warned when the documents came out.
Sources now telling CNN the FBI is investigating the possible hack of the Clinton campaign.
This attack was part of a broader assault, according to officials, on Democratic political organizations, including the DCCC.
As a matter of fact, I called to ask when the DNC was hacked, and they did not tell us until the documents were published then. And we found out we were actually hacked, and that's when they got us on the phone with lawyers and finding out all the information.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What, when you made that first call, what did they tell you? Were they actively – did you get a sense that they were actively going through their files to see who would be affected by this, or what was their response to you?
No, we knew we were affected because already the Florida blogger had published a bunch of stuff. What we were told is don't go to that website, don't look at anything, because usually this phishing, the Russians are continuing to phish and they will get to your devices. So it was like, it was the worst because I was like aware that there was hacking, but I don't know what was out there until I could read in the papers or somebody telling me what was out there. I really, and you know, I have yet to go to these sites and take a look at it. I obviously don't trust that there's no phishing expedition going on. And at the end of the day, I mean, the stuff that came out on our research book, for example, with Joe Garcia, that was not newsworthy because it was stuff that everybody knew. Everybody knew he had been investigated. Everybody knew his chief of staff went to jail. Everybody knew. So that's the stuff that wasn't, I don't believe, you know, that that's really what they were after. What they were after is letting.
But we're just sort of curious, how do you find out that you've been hacked? I mean, this is a huge momentous event, right? Like,
yes.
your campaign stuff has been hacked by the Russians. This hack took place in the spring. You went through all of June, all of July and part of August, apparently unaware.
No,
that
and
these materials
exactly. And furthermore, I mean, I want to.
Do you realize how ridiculous that sounds?
It is ridiculous, and I do remember when the hacking came out about the DNC. I personally made a phone call to the DCCC to say, I want to know, was this hack? No, we keep our servers different. We have different servers, different email, different this. Well, that was correct. The answer was correct. They had different stuff. But what they didn't know at the time, I guess when they answered my question, was that those servers and that system was also hacked. And so wow. I assumed that we weren't affected.
So during those few months after the hack, there was no preparation on your campaign's part to prepare for any kind of leaking of documents because you didn't think they got your documents.
Absolutely. There was no preparation and no warning.
Of course, they did have Annette's documents, Among the materials that the hackers had obtained were the briefing book that our campaign had prepared on Joe Garcia, containing all the Oppo research they were planning to use against him. But potentially even more embarrassing, the hackers got their hands on the DNC's own research on Chideo herself. This needs a bit of explanation. Before competitive races, the parties will often compile research on their own candidates to find out their weaknesses and get ahead of any possible attacks the other side might deploy in the campaign. But of course, this research is never meant to become public. In these documents, the DNC said that many Floridians perceived Annette as a wealthy elitist. Not a good thing, and fretted about how her three previous unsuccessful runs for office in the state might paint her as an incompetent candidate.
So when the hack stuff does come out, and you can't even get to the site because you're worried that might make you even more vulnerable, what is the campaign doing to like mitigate the damage? How do you even go about trying to fix this thing?
It's very difficult, and it was very difficult. I actually had, within that day or the next few days after the hacking came out, a debate on Spanish TV. And as a matter of fact, Joe Garcia showed up at the debate with a book full of papers and claimed, I think it was just a book full of papers, but he claimed that was the research book that my quote unquote private detective had done on him. We never had a private detective. Obviously, we did the research. Every campaign that is a good campaign will do research on the opponent. But that was definitely his way of trying to say the sweet Annette Tadeo that all of you guys think and that our polling tells us she's, you know, her positives are way up. She's not so sweet. She had a private detective follow me around. And that was unfortunate because it wasn't true. And it was very hard to negate it. And, you know, it was just me saying, that's not true. We've never had a private detective.
But you have to figure out at that point in time just how much exposure you have, right? Like, you know, at that moment that you have that some DCCC materials have been hacked. You know that they relate to your race, but you don't know exactly how much they have. So how do you go about figuring that out? Who do you talk to? What does the DCCC say to you? Did you talk to the FBI at all?
No, they have yet to call me, which is interesting. But we spoke to the lawyers for the DCCC, who again advised us to, not confirm or deny, or I mean, certainly not confirm the accuracy of the documents, because one of the problems is, you know, the hackers are known for altering information. So we didn't know whether they were accurate or not. I never saw them, so I still don't know. But I definitely felt like I was out there campaigning, sort of naked. It's the best way I can describe it, and I've said this before. Because
what do you mean by that?
Because you're an open book. It's almost like if you're a football team, right? You're getting ready for the Super Bowl, and all of a sudden somebody steals your playbook and they put it out there for your opponents to see it. That's in essence the best description I have for what happened and how it felt.
And Garcia seemed to be able to capitalize on it, you know, bringing up the briefing book at the debate. I mean, what was your counter to him, and did you have a strategy going forward, knowing that he was going to use it to try to take advantage of that situation?
No, we honestly didn't. We were taken aback by it. We were not prepared for it. I have to be honest about that. And we were honest about the fact that, you know, everything that was out there was accurate.
And then one of the other documents that was leaked was a memo about you that the DCCC had written, where they had said that you were an incompetent candidate and that you're a wealthy elitist. And I'm wondering what your reaction to that was and sort of how you felt about that, because they had courted you to run in the primary.
I know. Well, you know, it's really interesting. The only thing I read that negative that they said, I didn't read that. What I read was, you know, I wasn't such a great fundraiser, they claimed. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was interesting, because right when that came out was when I actually outraised both my primary and general opponent in the quarter right before the election. So the party is, it is what it is.
I just want to go back to your assessment that it felt like sort of being naked almost. You know, obviously there's a political element to it where, as you mentioned, your entire strategy is just put out for the public to read, in addition to your opponent. But there must have been also a human element to it too, right? I mean, you had put your time and energy into this race. No races are easy. A lot of them take up a ton of work. They're draining emotionally. And then to have this happen, I'm not sure how it would feel from a personal standpoint. Can you walk us through what it was like for you?
The first thing I worried about was about my husband. As any candidate, we always worry about the family. But again, I had nothing to hide. So I didn't worry too much about it except for, you know, again, everybody knowing our playbook, everybody knowing who we were, what doors had we knocked on, what people have we mailed.
Sure.
What, you know.
Yeah, but you talked a little bit about your husband there. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes people who, for instance, all the House Democrats had their
phone numbers. Yes.
And, yeah. Were you among them?
No. But obviously they had had all my private information. There's no question. But that wasn't.
So what is that? I mean, I don't know what that's like. If I had my private information published online, I think I'd freak out. What was it like for you?
That part didn't bother me, and I'll tell you why. Because again, if you once you are a candidate, you are an open book, and it's
But there's open books, and then there's putting your address online. I mean, that seems like a step too far.
I give my cell phone number to everyone, to the, you know, to the amazement of all the staffers and anybody around me. They sure. hate it. But again, I am somebody that, which is funny because you mentioned elitist. I am somebody that really prides herself in always being there for people and being accessible and being a part of the people with whatever thing I have ever done. It's always been about, helping others, and all of us are in this together. So that's the part that didn't bother me. What bothered me is when I, you know, again, lies were spread about me, about, you know, private detectives or, you know.
Man, you got some thick skin. I would have been really upset if my home address was put online and my phone number was listed.
There's a big difference between being an open book and being accessible to your constituents and to your campaign and your volunteers and your fans. But there's also the other side of it, which was that you had stuff that was leaked on purpose. It was almost a violation of sort of, you know, what a normal campaign should be about. Did it make you paranoid at all, or your staff? Like, what things did you, after the leaks happened and the material was released, did you do any security precautions or enact any security precautions just for the campaign going forward in those last couple of days?
Yeah, we did. But the interesting part is, my campaign wasn't hacked. It was the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee who had my documents. So I think, as a businesswoman who has been in business over 20 years, I've always had extreme protection for our business. So I'm very much aware of the chances of people hacking and how many people tried to do that. And so I'm, you know, I think I'm much more careful than the normal person. But
can you walk us through the debate where Garcia decided to use that document that was hacked? Just for the background, the hacked document was what, a 76-page dossier that had been put together. And I think it's fair to say that most campaigns, if not all campaigns, do this type of thing. I would gather that he had put one together on you as well. So when he went ahead in the debate and decided to say that you had hired a private detective and that this was a nefarious thing for you to have done, were you baffled? Did you see that as political opportunism? Were you angry with him that he had used hacked documents? And did you talk to him about it at all?
I was very angry with him. You know, I was very angry with him for lots of reasons. Angry with him for getting into a race that he knew he couldn't win. All the polling that he had showed that there was no path to victory ever. I was angry with him because he then was definitely opportunistic and stretched the truth to say that it was actually a private detective following him around. You know, and all those things were very frustrating. It's part of unfortunately, in campaigning, a lot of opponents lie and stretch the truth.
Did you ever think to say, excuse me, but I'm sure you have a dossier on me too?
Oh, I did. I did. I definitely said it. I said, look, there's by the way, they published my research book too. I mean, you know, so it's amazing to me that, you know, the level of silliness at the end of the day. Unfortunately for regular voters, again, we're getting into the nitty gritty that regular voters don't get into. It's really just a subtle way of saying, you know, I know that I'm not trustworthy, that I was investigated, that my chief of staff went to jail. But look, she had a private detective follow me around. You know, she's not so, you know. So I think it was a very subtle way of getting, you know, trying to take away from my trustworthiness and my positive. And that obviously he was also seen in the polls that we had caught up, all of those 24 points.
Fine, that's fair. But what about the efficacy of him and then reporters as well? Using hacked materials. Obviously, as someone who's been on the other side of this, I imagine that it's very frustrating for you to see them used. But do you begrudge him, honestly? If you had been in his spot, would you have done the same? Same for reporters. Do you begrudge them? If you had been a reporter, wouldn't you use that material?
If you don't mind, I'm going to turn it around on you with a question. If somebody,
oh, you're turning the interview on me.
Yeah. If somebody were to give you the playbook to the Super Bowl, would you have published it just because somebody was able to steal it? And so that's in essence what everyone was doing with these documents. I think it's wrong. I think it's not just morally wrong. I think it's illegal. It's stolen information. And if we need to, fortify those laws to make sure that they're you know, I believe in freedom of the press and you guys being able to get information, but stolen information, there's a big difference, right? And so I just think there's a point where we need to draw the line, and it's a fine line. Cause again, I believe in freedom of the press, but it is a fine line. And I go back to the Super Bowl. How would we react if, you know, someone doesn't even have to be a foreign country. In this case, it was Russia, but hacked one of the teams and stole the playbook. What would we do? Would we?
I mean, I would be upset, but if my team won, maybe I wouldn't be that upset. Did you ever think about legal remedies after Garcia used that material? I mean, you talked about it, thinking you just said it might have been illegal. Did you instruct your lawyers to look into that?
No. No. Politics, unfortunately.
Why not?
Because there's so many rules that in politics we, are so gray. And that's what I mean by fortify the laws. I think there has to be a point. But I also think, unfortunately, we're surrounded by all kinds of candidates in both parties, who will go to quite, great lengths, to win. Obviously, I'm not one of those.
Well, the Republicans ended up using material that was hacked against Garcia. So it kind of came full circle. And it was almost like the Russians couldn't have played that election any more beautifully. And I'm wondering, you know, did you ever reach out to Garcia after it was all over and just sort of discuss, you know, the race and discuss what had happened and, you know, kind of make amends over this stuff?
No, I have not and have no desire of making amends, to be honest.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.
You've become sort of a cautionary tale in a way, right? Like, you never set out, you set out to win. You wanted to be in Congress. And then in the end, you're going to be this example of like what happens when someone gets hacked and their secrets are unspooled for the public.
Mm-hmm. But if we learn from it, if we learn from it, and if we can actually get ourselves to be, to not have countries interfere, other countries, enemy countries interfere in our elections, then I think it'll be a worthwhile thing that happened to me if something good can come out of it, which is why I'm speaking so much about it.
Are you going to run for office again?
Never say never, and probably yes.
probably yes. And this time you'll make sure that the DCCC and your campaign are...
Guess what? I am not sharing my documents with servers and entities I cannot trust.
That's a smart move.
You want their help. You want the party's help and the party's support, but I don't know about trusting them so much. It's certainly not a good idea.
That was former congressional candidate Annette Tadeo. Annette is now a candidate for the state senate in Florida's 40th district. Candidate Confessional is produced and edited by Zach Young, who also wrote our amazing theme music. If you're enjoying this season of the show, please continue to spread the word. Next week, we're joined by Shannon O'Brien, former Massachusetts gubernatorial candidate and one of my favorite people, and the only person to ever lose an election to Mitt Romney. See you then.